It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Eric Michaud.
And it is Sunday, March 8th, 2020. This will be coming out on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, Monday, everything's dark.
Yeah, so you need
something to listen to.
Everyone sits home and listens to Open Call.
That's right. And so, boy, do we have a show to talk about.
Yeah, we saw Margaritaville.
Yeah.
At the Pantages. No, at the Dolby.
Well, yeah, through the Hollywood Pantages, but at the Los Angeles Dolby Theater at Hollywood and Highland, where the Oscars are held.
And really glad you realized that before we went to the Pantages.
Yeah. I was checking my tickets. We had actually bought parking at the Pantages.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up losing that. And then we still made it. We actually cut it kind of close.
Yeah. But, I mean, we were able to get there and get in and didn't want to miss a minute of Margaritaville.
Yeah. So this was the Pantages season. A lot of the next couple shows will be taking place at the Dolby Theater because Hamilton is going mm-hmm. to be in the Hollywood Pantages from, I believe, maybe end of March or April until September, October.
It's a long sit down again.
So, yeah, it's there for a long time. So they have to move all the other shows to a bigger theater, the Dolby. Which seats like 3,700 people.
Do you know how big is Pantages?
Like 3,000.
Okay, so it's like 700 additional seats.
Yeah. So, I don't think that the Dolby is the best place for something like Band's Visit.
Right.
But we're going to see Band's Visit in a cavernous space where the Oscars are held.
Oh, boy.
The actual theater was fine. On our way there, I was like, well, if it's the Dolby, then the sound better be like really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the sound was fine.
Yeah, for the most part, I thought it was fine. I never really had any problems with diction or anything, or as far as catching words and whatnot.
Yeah. Now, the show itself, which is, I think, closed today.
Uh-huh.
So we're not hurting any of the chance of Escape to Margaritaville doing well in this leg of the tour by anything we say today. But I did mention to you that I feel like Pantages is competing to see which show is like the worst show I've ever seen.
Or the worst book of a musical that you've ever
worst
seen.
Book, like just book after book in these musicals are so bad. And this is up there.
It's a contender for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I mean, we almost, if I had said 5 minutes into it, do you want to leave? You probably would have left.
Yeah. I did find it very telling that you asked me if the show was called Escape to Margaritaville or Escape from Margaritaville.
Right. Actually, you could argue the plot could go both directions.
Right.
It actually is more like Escape from Margaritaville.
That's cute that you said there's a plot.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, because of the storyline of what happens, it's actually more that they're escaping from the island
it's
where
true.
Margaritaville is.
I find it a weird choice that you're building a gross, rundown, like holiday, you know, like place around the name Margaritaville when he's trying to open Margaritaville, like vacation spots.
Yeah, they mentioned like this place is run down. It's not very maintained.
The gazebo or the porch swing is broken and this is broken and that doesn't work and this isn't real. And it's like you're luring people to this island with these promises of this great resort and then they get there and it's shit.
Yeah.
And it's like maybe that's not the message you want to send when you're trying to open a Margaritaville series of resorts.
I think that his fan base is Teflon to those kind of problems. I mean, I don't think that they would. I mean, to me, it would be a bad move to create a terrible show. But also, then it doesn't matter that he makes horrible music too. So like, none of the issues of quality really matter.
It just doesn't matter across the board.
No, I mean, I'm not very familiar with Jimmy Buffett music. And I didn't realize how appropriating it is and co-opty it is mm-hmm. of, you know, Latino music and black music and Caribbean music. And just in general. It's just like, it's all very much feels like what it is, which is like a bunch of white guys doing covers of inspired by more interesting music.
Right.
But this show's horrible. it's really bad. So there was a joke, 10 minutes in, I forget what it was, but the comic relief character, man, said something like, he did that joke where it's like where somebody says like, did you go to the bathroom? And he says, and his joke is that he says something that rhymes with that, which I forget what it was, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, like if a character's deaf and they're like,
oh,
mom, do you want to go to the bank? And they go like, I don't want to go get a tank or whatever. There was a joke like that early on in the show. And that's when you actually were like, do you want to leave?
Yeah, it took a lot to stick around after intermission.
Yeah,
it took this podcast.
I know. The only reason we stayed was to just talk because we were like, well, I guess we'll talk about it in the podcast.
Right. And we feel like we couldn't give you half a review.
I mean, I could have. Well, also the second half didn't really change anything. The second half was shorter, maybe?
The second half was shorter. The thing I found the most bizarre was the leading lady basically disappears.
Yeah.
Like for a good portion of Act Two.
Yeah. This is a non-equity tour. This show was on Broadway.
Briefly.
I think you said it was up for three months.
Yeah.
This is the first tour. It's non-equity, which is, I guess, not great.
Not a great sign, no.
Yeah, not a great sign, but also not a great, it's just bad all around. It's like not a great, you know, it's not a very pro-labor thing for a tour to do, for a producer to do. It's also, to me, as a person that's not a member of Actors Equity, sort of yet another sign of like the union is not particularly strong. I don't think that if the union was in a good, strong position, that the first tours of Broadway shows, no matter how poorly they did, would be non-equity. I think that's just, there's nothing they can do about it. But I just think it's not a great sign.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. They really can't do anything about it, but it's true. I mean, basically the producers go, well, either we do a non-equity tour or it's not going to tour.
Yeah. I mean, you can't do any movie or television show of any significance without being a member of Screen Actors Guild. And I don't know why they have more power or have been, you know, even Screen Actors Guild, there's you actually can be in commercials that are paying pretty well without being in SAG. And that's a new development, you know, over the last couple of years. But, Equity as a theater union just seems much more sort of hamstrung in terms of what they can do.
Yeah.
And also with all these unions, I guess in the performing arts, it's like, there's really no, it's not like if you work in a factory, you would hope that joining a union makes it easier for you to find employment or something. Like it's connected to your employment somehow.
Right.
And that's just not true for performing arts.
Right. I mean, for Equity, once you join, a lot of times it limits. I mean, most of the time
that's
it
true for SAG too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are non-SAG and their representation tells them to not join SAG because it rules them out of all the, you know, all the work that they could be doing.
Yeah. That's what my agent told me here for commercials. She said, don't go SAG until you absolutely have to.
Yeah. So, do you want to
jump in a plot?
Well, the thing is I kind of want to, you know, one thing I would love to do, which, is probably not feasible, is I would love to like, give listeners to the podcast a ticket to the show. And force them to watch the show.
Force them.
Yeah.
It's more of like like if you lose the contest, you get the tickets.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I want to give a shout out to Kelsey Bauble.
Hey, Kelsey.
She wrote and said she's booked her next trip to New York City, and the podcast is helping her get even more excited. Thanks, amigos. is what she said. Kelsey, please let us know what you're going to go see. And also, I had put a little Easter egg into I had to republish one of our episodes recently. And in the description for the episode I wrote, if you said the word salamander in your email, you'd get a free prize. And we haven't decided what the prize is going to be. But Kelsey, please send us an early email with your address and we'll send you something nice.
Yeah.
We got lots of stuff in the house that
lots of theater.
Theater related stuff that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That will help us be a little more minimal in our house, and we'll send you a little surprise.
Win a contest, we'll send you our trash.
We'll send you our junk. One man's junk is another person's junk.
There, yeah.
So, Kelsey, send us an email and tell us what shows you're going to see in New York.
Yeah, we'd love to hear.
But I did come out of this thinking like our friend Ashley, our friend Amber, our friend John, I wanted to like go on Gold Star and be like, here, I bought you a ticket. You have to go see it. Cause it was really just awful. Really nothing to recommend it. I will say that I think that the two female leads were pretty strong singers.
Mm-hmm.
The comic relief guy was a good singer.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the extent of, you know, people were fine, I guess.
Yeah. I thought the leading man was the weakest of all of them.
Yes.
He was very kind of just blah.
I think that we had talked about the fact that it's non-equity, that because there are so many women trying to be in theater,
mm-hmm.
even the person that's non-equity that's in a like a prominent tour, the women are still going to be very good.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think the men have to be as good.
I agree with you. It's like it's the old school play thing.
Yeah.
You know, the women are fighting over the leads, and meanwhile, like, the football players are getting asked to do it because there's no guys auditioning.
Yeah, it's such an annoying thing because it just shows that, like, the sort of structural, like, misogyny that's in our culture has nothing to do with, like, oh, they're, you know, this is the thing they say about, like, when they try to cast for diversity. And it's like, oh, well, there's not enough Asian actors for us to cast, you know, all the parts in this play that's an Asian fairy tale with Asian actors, right? But so, first of all, that's bullshit. But also, that's demonstrably untrue when it comes to women, you know, and writing theater for women, writing more roles for women.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to still, but like every year there's a breakdown where people analyze like the movie industry,
mm-hmm.
and they say these are the roles. This is the breakdown of the roles. This is how many director jobs went to men versus women, and it's not great, but they are at least capturing the data as to how those things are breaking down. And I bet that if we still did a breakdown of like roles on Broadway, I bet still more of them are going to men than women.
Mm-hmm.
And
certainly as far as directors go too.
Yeah. And unquestionably, there are more women in the theater and musical theater field as talent pool
mm-hmm.
than men. Like that's true at every single level of theater.
I think there are far more really, really talented women who are not working than there are really, really talented men who are not working in musical theater.
Yeah. And, I mean, but you can see this from the moment you are in a community theater production when you're 8 years old. Every single level you move up, there's more women than men involved. Mm-hmm. So the competition is just like so much harder. So even, you know, the two women that were in this non-equity production both have very strong singing voices.
Yeah, for sure.
So now what else is there to say about this fucking terrible play?
I felt really, I mean, it definitely looks non-equity. It looks real cheap.
Yes.
And it
didn't even really have projections.
No. Yeah, it had like a tiki hut and a couple of little props from tables around here.
It had a piece of cloth at one point. It had a very nice theatrical moment when they were scuba diving. I liked that.
With the waves.
That was like my favorite part because it was creative. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I don't mind if it's cheap, if it's creative.
Sure.
But yeah, it looked very cheap.
And I felt so bad for the ensemble because so many of them were having to move so many set pieces.
Yes. And actually, since it's non-equity, they probably weren't getting paid any extra.
Oh, I'm sure they weren't. Yeah.
Because as when Ryan Duncan was on our podcast, he clarified that if you move a piece in an equity show, you do get extra money.
Huh. I don't think I knew that. I don't.
Yeah. They can't ask you to, in an equity show,
mm-hmm.
at least on a Broadway tour level,
uh-huh.
to move set pieces for free.
Huh.
So
I should know that, but I didn't know that.
But non-equity, I bet they can.
Yeah. Going back to that point though, like there was a moment, I think it was at the end of the show, where it was kind of like the wedding scene, I think, where the entire ensemble picked up chairs and ran off stage and then ran right back on.
Oh.
I was like,
Was it coming out of the wedding?
I think so. It was very awkward because they all just like got up and ran off and then ran right back in to start singing and dancing. And it was just like that, like just give them one moving platform.
Yeah.
And put the chairs on that.
This was directed by Christopher Ashley, who directed Come From Away.
The Broadway production was. This one was based on his original. That's how they get away with it. Because it was directed by, I think, his assistant from the Broadway production.
Well, so what does it say in the program?
Directed by, I forget what her name was.
Oh, because his name was in the program.
Yeah, as like original director. So basically she recreates his direction, but he technically doesn't have hands on it.
I mean, there's no way this show was like a gem on Broadway and then like got turned into a horrible thing on the tour.
The book is the same.
The book is the same. And the, I mean, just to talk about the union status again, I do think it's shitty that, like, I don't think that's, like, he's a powerful director. Mm-hmm. Like, he runs, or he's a prominent figure at La Jolla, where this started. I don't think you should let your direction be used in a non-equity tour.
Right.
Inspired by or whatever. I don't think a choreographer, if you care about protecting a union, that's mm-hmm. all. I don't, there isn't a director's union, I don't think, right?
I don't think so, no.
So, but I mean, if you want to have any solidarity with a union, I don't think you should let it be just copied.
Right.
But also, I just can't believe that it's the same, whether or not it's based on his direction, I can't believe it's the same person that directed Come From Away. Because Come From Away is also a not, doesn't look expensive, but it's very, very creative in how it tells its story.
Right.
And this just feels so like people just cashing checks, making this happen in a way that's just, it feels very cynical. Like, let's just make the bare bones story that we, I mean, let's just take snippets of lyrics and turn them into characters.
Turn them into characters or turn them into plot pieces.
Yeah.
Like,
well, what's this old guy going to do?
Oh, he can't find his shaker of salt.
Yeah.
Oh, or like, oh, they got drunk and had and got tattoos and they don't remember where they got them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it was just moment after moment of that.
I didn't know this thing that is, what is it? Like, looking for my shaker of salt.
Looking for my lost shaker of salt.
Yeah. Salt. 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 The audience, a couple people did that. A
little call and response.
The first time they did it without any
prompting.
Prompting, and I thought it was very strange, and then everyone started doing it. Mm-hmm. What was the other one where they were like, is the song Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, the first time they sang that, they were like, why don't we get drunk and then the audience all said screw.
Yeah.
And I said, screw you, Jimmy Buffett. Boy, what else is there to say about this show? I mean,
the choreography was real bad.
Well, I also want people to see it just because it's like sort of, and here the problem is that it's not really enjoyably bad.
No.
It's just bad.
It's tedious.
But there are moments where you're just like, what on earth is happening?
The dream sequence with the insurance salesman.
Yes. So early on, it's on this island and there's a volcano. And one of the characters said, it erupted once and it killed 15 insurance salesmen, life insurance salesmen. And their bodies, like we're walking on their bodies right now.
Buried in
and
lava.
Another guy is like, oh no, now I'm having dreams about these insurance salesmen. And then out come, you know, 15 dancers in ashen suits
with briefcases.
And they are the like, I don't know what, like
the ghosts of the dead insurance people.
So they show up once. I think he sings a song with them or something like that. And then later in Act Two, I believe, they're looking for the treasure again. Or there's a hidden treasure. It's all bullshit. they're looking for something on the island, and then he's like, "I'm having a acid flashback."
Right.
They
kept talking about him doing
the zombies are back, and then like the insurance salesman is like, "Okay, so here's what happens." They come out and they start tap dancing. And the other guy's like,
"Oh no,
what's going on?" Like, and he's like, "I'm seeing them tap dance." And he's like, "But it's happening in your head. You can control what they do by thinking a certain way."
Right.
So he makes them all freeze. So okay, just to backtrack, he's freaked out that they're tap dancing. So then he makes them all freeze. He makes one of them do, and it's like three bits in a row where it's a copy of a copy of a copy. Somebody had some comedic idea, and now some poor non-equity actor has just been told, like, just do this, and it will get zero laughs, which is what it did. So then he makes them do little, like, you have to do a front hand, you have to do acrobatics.
And then one guy did, like, a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he's like, oh, I can make them do anything I want. What I want them to do?
Tap dance.
Right, which is what they were doing when they started.
The thing I explicitly didn't want them to do.
Right, but now this is what I always wanted them to do. And then it becomes a basically a ripoff of the Turn It On, Turn It Off number from
Mormon.
Right? Is that the one that turns out to be a big tap dance number?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically that.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a fake out tap number.
Yeah. And they, I guess, were really tapping, but was he? He wasn't.
I don't think any of them were.
Do you think it was just a sound cue?
I think it was a pre-recorded track of taps because it didn't
look right. It didn't have that Yeah.
But also there were times when they were moving around and there was no sound.
Well, I think that's one of the exciting things about real tap dance is when you get that visceral, like what show have I seen where they like actually put like a wooden board that has like microphones on it? And like, I saw like where you feel this visceral connection between like what you're seeing and the sound that you're making. Mm-hmm. And not only are they dancing, but they're kind of playing an instrument at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's like super exciting. But I feel like tap dance is in these musicals way more. Tap dance and gospel are just in these musicals way more than they should be,
mm-hmm.
in fake ways, in like ways that have quotation marks around them.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the majority of time that tap dance and gospel are in these shows, it's not being done by Black people. So like we basically co-opted this
tap dancing and gospel.
Yeah. Like from African Americans, and just like it's useful to us as a storytelling device.
With quotes around it.
With quotes around
That's the worst part. Because like we're co-opting something and also doing it, like, ironically.
Well, because then it doesn't have to be amazing, mm-hmm. you know. By the way, white people can tap dance. I saw Crazy for You.
Sure.
Harry Grainer.
42nd Street.
Was in that, and he did a good... Harry Grainer tap dance on top of a bus in Crazy for You.
On a bus?
Or like a car or something.
Yeah, oh, the big... Yeah, the big...
He was on top of a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great. Of course, that same summer I saw Jelly's Last Jam, which had real... really good tap dance.
Gregory Hines and
Savion Glover.
Yeah.
The book for this show is really, really just terrible.
There's also something that you really hated was the, hey, we should have sex. No, I don't want to, but you will later. Oh,
well, I mean, this was crazy because this show came out what? Like when was
last
it
year?
Last year. The amount of, hey, I'm hitting on you. No, thanks. All right, well, I'm going to do it again. Mm-hmm. I understand that that's a thing in romantic comedies that maybe, I mean, I don't think that it has to ever happen. I think it should happen zero times, but let's just say for the sake of storytelling, you let it happen once because sometimes people, you know, rub each other the wrong way at first, mm-hmm. and then eventually get along. Even though, like, I feel like in real life, there aren't that many situations where you're like, I fucking hate that guy. Oh, now I'm in love with you. Yeah, like it's overrepresented in romantic comedies.
I mean, it goes the other way a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, oh, he's amazing. Yeah, then we should have more shows about that.
Just falling out of love.
Yeah. But okay, let's say you can do it once, but like multiple men in this show were like, I want to hook up with you, and I'm going to ask you 4 or 5 times,
mm-hmm.
and then. It's justified because the women really did like them.
Right. Well, like the whole, I mean, first of all, the misogyny of the kind of secondary character's fiance.
That was rude. But that was so there's a character in it that's like, if you think that the husband and waitress is like a kind of a flat wooden character, which I do, I think that's not a strong part of Waitress's story. I think the husband is very kind of a caricature. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's not that I think people should sympathize with somebody who's abusive. I think that it's more reflective of like the way those relationships really are in real life, that somebody can be abusive, but also can be charismatic or compelling in some way. And there's like the way they're often written in these shows is they're so like black and white, terrible. That's just, of course you should leave this guy. Like there's no question.
There's right? nothing that should keep you there.
Right. So, the guy in Waitress is kind of shallow in that way,
mm-hmm.
But he's like the Marianas Trench compared to the guy in this show, because the guy basically comes out with a, I think they're supposed to be from Cincinnati, but he had like a Boston or New York accent.
Yeah, they are from Cincinnati. Yeah, she says.
But he was basically like, you're fat.
Right. Like, he's like watching the hockey game with his buddies on the couch.
Yeah.
And
well, you know how people in Cincinnati watch that great hockey team they have there.
I love it.
They really seemed like they were from Boston. Like they were watching mm-hmm. the Bruins or something.
Right.
And it's like, I bought you a smaller wedding dress because you're going to lose weight before like,
even though we're getting married in like 4 days.
And by the way, I feel like most grooms don't give a shit about that stuff.
Right. he cares about it, that she's fat.
Yeah. And how can I love you if you're, I think he actually said, how can I love you if you're fat?
Or yeah. Something like he that. Did say that at the end, which that was like the final straw.
Yeah. But also see, this makes it okay that she goes to this island and then like basically cheats on him.
Right. She doesn't physically cheat on him.
Right.
But everything else basically.
When does she kiss the guy though? after he leaves.
I don't think they do anything physical until she dumps the fiance.
Okay. I will say the Dolby Theater has a nice charcuterie.
that was the plus.
That was the plus. Although it's very pricey. It's a Wolfgang Puck charcuterie pack.
Mm-hmm.
Like a nice little sausage, cornichons, little crackers. I enjoyed that part of the experience.
We didn't mention your biggest problem or my biggest problem with the show, which I'm assuming was your biggest problem with the show.
What?
Jesus.
Oh, that wasn't my biggest problem, but yeah, it's terrible.
There's a character who's supposed to be somebody vacationing at the...
He works there.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, okay. Remember because he announced him at the end.
Oh, right.
He's part of the staff, but his name is
Jesus. And the old man who's looking for his shaker of salt. I can't talk today. Shaker of salt keeps calling him Jesus.
Yeah.
And he keeps correcting him and saying, my name is Jesus.
Yes.
And literally the character says, we're in America. I'm going to speak American and call you Jesus.
Is that what he said? Because they're something not in to America. That point. But yeah, that is what he said.
Yeah. And then continually call. And then the guy at the end of it is just like fine with the fact that they call him Jesus then.
Right.
At the end because he becomes a minister or something.
Well, it's one of those things where if another character says like, hey, that's not right, then it's okay for the audience to laugh at the joke.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't my biggest problem with it. My biggest problem with this show was just the script and music and performances.
My biggest problem with this show is that it exists.
I would actually say the performances are probably my least, like, smallest problem with the show. Like, there's nothing they could do. Like, I kind of always side with the actors. Like, it's not like there was a rich vein of gold to be mined from this material that they were missing on.
Yeah.
It's just,
they did the best they could with what they had.
Yeah.
Although I do, like I said, I don't think the leading characters, the male and female did not have any chemistry.
No.
And he was really, whatever the word for lack of charismatic, lack of charisma. Well,
he's basically a Morrison. It's Matthew Morrison. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Matthew Morrison's way more charismatic.
Well, you never saw Matthew Morrison in Finding Neverland, where he was just a void of charisma. And so I would say this guy was, I'll give him two Morrisons out of five.
Wow.
it was interesting. He actually did have a nice singing voice. And I told you afterwards, I think that he is a good candidate to play the photographer in Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had that kind of mellifluous kind of voice that didn't always feature very well in some of the songs.
No.
But near the second act did a little bit.
Well, especially when he, climbed the charts and won a Grammy.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
For the Yacht Rock.
So, I mean, let's see. If the plot is there's a guy that works at this resort and he kind of has a girlfriend every week whenever the tourists come in. And then they leave and he lets them go. You know, they always fall for him and he's like, hey, it's just a temporary thing. And then this lady comes and she's like a whip smart tech climate scientist investor lady who wants to make an app or a startup that has to do with potatoes providing electricity, which I guarantee none of this was researched because as they were saying, I was like, this just sounds ridiculous. But he kind of falls for her. The tables are turned.
I know.
And she's kind of like, hey, it's no big deal.
It was just a week.
Right. So she's there for 5 days.
Right.
And then he falls for her. And then I believe they end up, like in SpongeBob, the volcano erupts. Spoiler for SpongeBob. Oh boy, this is going to be a good year for this podcast because SpongeBob's coming up.
So many shows with volcanoes.
We're going to do, I think, we'll do 5 episodes on Hamilton where I just bring a different person to Hamilton over and over. We just talk about Hamilton and how great it is because Hamilton in and of itself is so great, but like put it next to these shows and it's beyond, it's like almost like not even the same species of people that's creating this work.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, I'm there for 5 days. This is just a fling. Don't worry about it. And then he follows her to America.
Mm-hmm.
And then while he's like playing a song in a bar, an agent, a musical aid, because this is how it happens. People from the music industry are constantly in dive bars in Cincinnati looking for open mic level singers to be like,
The next big thing.
Yeah, you're the next big thing. And then for, I would say 4 minutes, it just becomes like Ain't Too Proud, where like they just go like, he rockets off and he's like, I'm playing in the Grand Ole Opry. Now I'm playing in Detroit. Now I'm playing. It's like, it literally becomes like a music, like on your feet or whatever. Like just, and all those shows, they have a moment where they're like, then they played this city and then right. this happened. And it becomes that for 4 minutes, ending with them being like, and best new artist goes to Tully Wells. And then, he's having a, like, by the way, I don't think anyone cares if I spoil it.
I really don't think so.
He goes back to the island to kind of have a celebratory thing, and she has returned, the scientist woman. And so
it's 3 years later.
3 years later, and she's like, okay, remember that 5-day thing we had 3 years ago? I'm in love with you. And we're supposed to assume that in the 3 years between, he hasn't had any meaningful connections with anybody as like a rising star, you know,
Grammy winner.
Like he hasn't even had like he definitely would have had some celebrity relationship or like anything,
something.
But basically he's like, oh, I still love you too. It's just insane. Yeah, this show's terrible. What else is, I think we're kind of making it sound more interesting than it actually was.
Yeah.
Because
Like I said, it really took a lot to stick around after.
Oh, I know. I know something you hated more than the Jesus.
Oh boy,
the puns. I think the puns might have been one of the times early on that you were like, "Let's leave."
I think I involuntarily let out a sigh at one point. It was just like, "Ugh,
yeah."
God.
So the two comic relief characters, the man and the woman, they're like this, basically the second couple, you know, like Love's Labor's Lost, classic pairs of lovers structure. They share. Oh, no. She first says a pun to her fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's like, puns aren't funny.
Right.
Which, you know, I agreed with him. I agreed with the abusive husband at this point, the fiance.
You were on his side.
And then she shares a love of puns with the other comic relief, the secondary male lead.
The two of them, I will say, reminded me of the secondary couple in Anastasia.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's what I mean. It is kind of a standard,
it's like a
construction. You know, they're kind of, I mean, you know, Adelaide and Nathan Detroit are kind of that too.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to bring some charm to this, you know, and they're at, I believe, wait, who got married at the end? Was it the two?
The Tully leads? And, yeah.
Okay. So they're going.
Because the other two were already married and had a kid at that
point. Oh, that's right. So they go to this wedding and then the guy's like, you know, I just feel sorry for that one melon that can't get married. And she's like, which one? And he's like, the cantaloupe. And your favorite thing is that they say the joke and then someone else has to be like, that was terrible.
Right. Because you can still make the joke if someone else on stage comments on how bad the joke was.
Yeah.
We should mention the book was co-written by Mike O'Malley.
Yes.
Who used to host Nick Arcade.
Oh, is that what, yeah. Is that what he's known for?
And he was on Glee.
He was the father. He was, what's that kid's name who played the gay character?
Kurt
was the character's name.
Oh.
He's his father, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That character was played by, all it says is Chestnut Brown is his hair color. That character was played by someone at home right now is going like yelling out the name. Oh my God. Just tell me who played it. Just tell me who.
Coffer?
Let's see how long we can extend this.
Something. I never watched Glee, I should
Chris
say.
Chris Colfer.
Colfer. I said Coffer.
Because was he a Evan Hansen?
No.
He replaced something in a Broadway show.
I think you're thinking of the kid from...
I'm thinking of the kid from Real O'Neill's.
Right. Who was a... He was a Evan Hansen.
Right. And that character was gay too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see if Chris Colfer has ever been on Broadway. So... Mike O'Malley co-wrote this,
right.
And it's really bad. I mean, it feels like everybody was just like, well, this musical is going to happen. I guess I'll you know, it doesn't feel like they, there are some shows like, I've seen clips of the David Byrne show.
Mm-hmm.
That's American Utopia, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. Even like American Psycho, there are things where you take a property and you're like, let's try something. Like American Psycho is a very flawed show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like amazing, but at least they tried to do something creative with it or try to take it some direction that maybe didn't work, but like has some ambition to it. This really feels like it's like, oh, we got these are the 21 songs we're going to use. Let's look at the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Let's string together enough. You know, it'd be like if they did a police musical and there was like, well, there's this lady named Roxanne.
Exactly.
She completely walks out on stage with a red light. And then she gets like a respiratory disease. And then they're like, well, every breath you take, the doctor sings that to her, you know, to diagnose her with like a fatal lung disease, you know.
And then they have a baby and it's, what is it, goo, 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 gaga, gaga is all I have to
say. Yeah. And then at the end, like the disease returns and then they're like, don't stand so close to me. And like, that's like, great. We wrote the book for
done
the police musical.
I mean, do you have, you should copyright that.
Yeah, I should.
Somebody's gonna.
So yeah, everyone should just go see the show.
it was not, it wasn't even enjoyable. That's the hardest part about it. It wasn't even enjoyable. There were many, many points where I just wanted to get up and leave.
Yeah.
And at one point you did.
I did.
I wasn't sure if you were coming back.
I had to leave. You know, I was tempted to just sort of sit out there until it was over, but I did return. Oh, but also at the Dolby, the show is playing on, it's like a basketball game.
Right.
It's on monitors
mm-hmm.
in the hall. So I was able to keep up with the complicated plot when I got home.
Well, thank God. Cause I mean, you missed the whole plane scene.
Well, also I was able to just sort of move to an empty row.
Yeah.
When I came back.
we both did. We both moved to our own individual empty rows.
Yeah. To just get a lot of space to sit wherever
we were. And we were in the orchestra. So I can't imagine what the balconies were like. All the boxes were empty. I will say the Dolby is beautiful.
Yeah.
The theater is really, really pretty.
It's beautiful. And it's kind of neat that you're like, oh, like a couple weeks ago, this is where Brad Pitt was sitting or whatever.
Right.
You know, I think that was neat.
Yeah.
And actually, I would say technically, I was glad that the sound was handled well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look forward to seeing, I guess, bands visit in there. It'll be very weird to see it in such a huge space.
Yeah.
We've had friends who have seen bands visit on the tour previous to this stop who have been like, what's like, this show's boring or whatever.
Yeah.
And I can see if you like, the bands visit's like a little gem of a show. I think feel like you need it compressed.
It needs to be intimate. Yeah.
So we weren't really going to talk about news. I did want to say, do you have anything else to say about Margaritaville?
Don't.
No, you should go see it and please email us.
Oh, no, I was going to say like, don't write any more musicals like this.
I know. I don't think it will be the end of it.
Well, no, there's a Michael Jackson musical on its way, a Britney Spears musical on its way, and a Pat Benatar musical on its way.
And also there's Jagged Little Pill.
Jagged Little Pill's right. Yeah.
There's Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And we saw Anne Juliet,
right?
Right. So I think you guys should go see this. You know, if you go see it and write us an email or send us a voicemail at opencallpodcast@gmail.com, maybe I'll like reimburse you part of the ticket.
I do want to say my favorite part of the show,
uh-huh.
Cause we didn't mention this. Because we were subscribers, we got a Toblerone.
That's right. Not just a Toblerone.
Oh, right.
We got a Hawaiian lei, which I guess, was this in Hawaii? Maybe it was in Hawaii. Were there any Asians in this movie, in this play at all? I don't think there were.
I think there was one Asian girl in the ensemble.
Okay, let's look at cities that this is going to, because this tour is far from over. I'm very excited for some of you guys to watch this show. Pueblo, Colorado for one day. Albuquerque, New Mexico. Athens, Georgia, Columbus. Oh, my God. They're going from New Mexico to Georgia. Columbus, Georgia, Huntsville, Alabama. Oh my God. I feel so bad for this cast. Listen, Huntsville, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
then Appleton, Wisconsin. Okay. 2 days later, Fort Myers, Florida.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
And you know, they're on a bus.
They're probably on a bus.
There's no way they're flying them.
So Florida, then Green. Oh my God. I have to read all this entire list. because this is kind of what we did on 50 Shades of Musical. So, okay, we've gone from Alabama to Wisconsin, back to Fort Myers, Florida. And how far down is that,
do you think? Fort Myers is where my sister lives. Okay. So it's like 2 hours south of
Orlando. Then Greenville, South Carolina. So you're going north. Then Cincinnati, Ohio, where the characters are from.
Oh, my God.
And then Charleston, South Carolina.
Oof.
And then Schenectady, New York. And then 2 days later, Durham, North Carolina.
Holy shit.
Then Nashville, Tennessee. Then Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is obviously making a lot of sense. Then Grand Rapids, Michigan. Great. You go out west, you're in the Midwest. Then you go to Buffalo, New York.
Oh, my God.
Hartford, Connecticut. Philadelphia.
They go from New York to Michigan back to New York?
They go from Pittsburgh to Michigan to Buffalo.
Oh, my God.
Actually, cutting up to Buffalo, it won't be that bad. So then they go to Hartford, Connecticut, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Then they go to Omaha, Nebraska. they've got there's like a week in there where they can get there, because that's a long way. And then they go to San Antonio, New Orleans, Kansas. So they go from San Antonio to New Orleans to Kansas City to Dallas, Fort Worth, Tulsa, and they wrap it up in Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
So, guys, please go see one of those. You know what? Somebody should just rent a car for 6 months and just follow the show around.
Like the Grateful Dead, just follow it?
Yeah, follow it around. Just a couple little like newsy things I didn't want to say. I wanted to say rest in peace to James Lipton,
mm-hmm.
who was the person who hosted the Inside the Actor's Studio,
mm-hmm.
And actually gave us, you know, a fair number of pretty good interviews about the acting process. And then I wanted to recommend that people listen to Kelly O'Hara's interview on Alec Baldwin's podcast, Here's the Thing, which I listened to this week. And it's a very interesting, good interview that Kelly O'Hara talks about her process of, you know, building her career, and is pretty frank about the perceptions that people have of her, like what people think she's going to provide as a performer, and how she, like, basically after South Pacific wanted to do anything but that kind of character. She doesn't really want to be the, like, you know,
ingenue.
Yeah. Roger, I'm the sweet Hammerstein. Right. That she has. And it's interesting. She says in the interview that the first time she felt she really developed her acting in that direction was Bridges of Madison County, which is the first time I ever saw her.
Hmm.
So basically I saw her when she was felt like, you know, she was coming into her own as an actor.
Hmm.
Because I was like, oh, she's good.
Yeah.
I mean, she has a ridiculous Italian accent in that one. But,
the Pennsylvania Station.
Pennsylvania Station.
I will also say
that she's very pretty frank about her thoughts about her previous directors in that interview.
Really?
Yeah. Like, she basically says the guy who directed her in King Lear, she did King Lear at the Public with Sam Waterston, basically said the guy didn't know what he's doing. And then, what was it? There was something else. She kind of shits on Nicholas Hytner.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she's ready with the gossip more than you would think she would be.
Yeah, she seems so, like, sweet and, like, I'm just everyone's friend.
No, she's actually, like, cursing up a storm in that interview.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. Also, she gives a shout-out to my friend Aryan Moyed, who is my friend from Improv in New York, who put her in, like, a short, like, web series mm-hmm. that she got nominated for an Emmy for.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Also, we should mention that Kelly O'Hara, you know, just happens to be your co-star in a new film.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I mean, that's why I really listen to her, because she and I bonded so well on set. That was in Ohio as well. Yeah, we're both in a movie called All the Bright Places, which is on Netflix now. You can see it. Kelly O'Hara and I never met each other once. also, Keegan-Michael Key is in it. Luke Wilson is in it. And Elle Fanning, I did meet. She's very lovely. So mm-hmm. I can actually say, like, you know, I know Elle Fanning very well at this point. No. But we know. We got to know together. Each other. Yeah, we have scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
But the other, you know, I did tweet that, you know, now I've co-starred in something with Kelly O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
She had no reaction to that. However, the woman who wrote the original book, which is a young adult book, it's actually an interesting movie, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting story, and it's a pretty not sugar-coated view of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting in that sense. Yeah.
I do want to add one more thing real quick, not about just while we're doing shout outs and recommendations, two friends of ours have started a podcast based solely on
the,
the television show Encore.
So if you liked our last episode, we're just talking about Encore.
You can go really in depth episode by episode.
Yeah.
But Ben Seaman and Hannah Lopatin have a podcast called Encore Encore, where they break down every episode of the Disney Plus series Encore and really go in depth. And they also have some fun guests sometimes.
Yeah. So you should check that out for more. Got to hear more about Amy.
Yeah.
So we'll be back with you next week. We'll have some theater news for you. And I think coming up for us next is SpongeBob, which, in fact, if you live in the Los Angeles area and you want to see SpongeBob instead of me, maybe you should send an email to opencallpodcast@gmail.com so you can go see it with Eric instead of me.
There you go.
Because we saw it on Broadway, and I don't think it will have changed a lot since then.
But you loved it so much.
Yeah, I know. I want to preserve how brilliant the Broadway production was. I don't want to see, you know. And that's probably a 9-equity tour as well.
I believe it is.
That one actually will be fascinating to see what they did with the set.
Mm-hmm.
Because the set was probably like the most extensive part of that.
And the best part of it.
For me. And like there was a pretty elaborate chair thing that he climbed.
Like, yeah.
Like, I can't imagine they're going to do that.
Mm.
So maybe there'll be something like Addams Family, where like, didn't an entire number in Addams Family like change for the tour?
Several did. Actually, interesting, real quick, a song that was written for the tour of Frozen just went into the Broadway production.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And not from the movie. So like,
no, it was an original song that they wrote for the tour.
For the tour.
Yeah.
They That's wrote, so strange.
They did some revisions and some tweaking for the road show. And then, when Casey Levy and Patty Murin, the original two, Anna and Elsa, left the show, they put in the new song with the new cast.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So it'll be too late for you guys to do anything about this because the show is already sold out. But tonight, on the day of this publication of this podcast, I will be at UCB in a show called UCB versus Book of Mormon,
mm-hmm.
where members of the Book of Mormon touring cast will be doing like a musical theater quiz against some of us musical improvisers. And we're going to do a musical improv set at the end of it that they have been invited to participate in. I don't know if they will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not bringing it up free because it is sold out, so like you can't come see it. However, I mean, you could get a standby ticket or whatever, but I'm going to try to remember some of the musical theater. We should try to remember some of the questions,
mm-hmm.
and then we can sort of pose them to the audience next week.
Yeah, for sure.
See if they get any of them. And you know, maybe if it works out, maybe there'll be more UCB shows like this. Like they here's the problem. So they could do it with every show that comes to the Amundsen and Pantages. But then, for example, if they did like UCB versus Margaritaville, then how free would I feel to talk about Margaritaville afterwards?
Right. But like these really nice people that I worked with are awful.
Yeah.
This terrible show.
Yeah. I mean, we're already going to not talk about how I feel about the show Book of Mormon tomorrow night.
Sure.
So, cause you know, it's just a bummer to like, they don't need to hear my opinions about their incredibly successful show that literally everyone in the world loves except me.
Right.
You know, and I feel Eric's going to come see the show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I feel confident that there will be multiple musical theater questions that it will be killing him that I cannot answer.
That I'm wiggling in my seat in the audience about.
Yeah. So, and just an early plug, you're in Quick and Funny Musicals.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of the show this month?
Mall Wars.
Mall Wars. And that'll be the fourth Thursday.
Mm-hmm. At 8:30 p.m. at UCB Sunset.
Yep. So come see that. Other than that, please go see Margaritaville and send us an email. I think that'll do it for this week.
Alrighty.
See you next time.
Bye. It's open.